Not so fast, said the Miami Heat to the Denver Nuggets on June 4th, 2023, during Game 2 of the NBA Finals. I got to say, if you were watching the first half of that game, then how the final product got to where it did probably would have surprised you. And actually, I have an example of that. Sam and I are in a group chat with two of our buddies, and it was, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 minutes into the second quarter, and we got a text from one of our buddies basically saying that, man, it just doesn't look like the Heat have enough to keep up with Denver at point, just on any facet of the game, offensively, defensively. And then sure enough, here comes the fourth quarter, and the Miami Heat have absolutely flipped the game, and we get another text saying, oh, wow, we hadn't watched any of the second half. What happened? And I think if you're a Denver fan, you left the arena also saying, what happened? Because, my goodness, the Miami Heat stole game two in Denver, 111 to 108. Sam, we got ourselves a series.
Yeah, that's all really we can hope for, right? Denver, at times, with the play of Nikola Jokic, has looked unbeatable. But the shooting is the ultimate equalizer. If Miami is making their shots with all those role players, all those undrafted players that they have in there playing way above their potential, if they're able to continue to make shots in this series, it just sounds so simple, right? If as long as Miami is able to make shots, they're able to stay into this series.
Right. And, you know, for as maybe bad as the second quarter visually may have looked for the Miami Heat, let's keep in mind, I mean, it was 51-57 going into halftime. So they, yes, they gave up a huge run by Denver, but let's not make it seem like, you know, the Heat were absolutely down in a hole heading into the second half. Sure, they were down by 15 at one point in the game. That's fine. They fought their way back. But halftime really, you know, obviously is probably a good judge sometimes for maybe what the second half is going to look like. And it was only a 6-point game. It was only a 6-point game, despite how bad the second quarter looked for the Miami Heat. And truthfully, it's not like they fell off a cliff in the second quarter either. The Heat scored 26 points, and they were beating Denver by 3 in the first quarter. They scored 25 in the second quarter. So it's not like their production plummeted off of a cliff in the second quarter. Denver just got really hot. So let's talk about this game a little bit. Do you want to start on Denver's side, or do you want to start on the Miami side? Because I think there's a couple different interesting angles that we can take off of game two.
Start with Denver, I guess, first.
Okay, so the biggest thing for me about Denver was the fact that Jamal Murray was fairly quiet for most of the game. He had 18 points, 10 assists, 4 rebounds. Yes, he had 10 assists and 18 points, but those points primarily, a big chunk of them, came in the fourth quarter. I think he had like 9 or something going into the fourth quarter, and then he kind of got hot at the end. I sent you and the guys a text during that fourth quarter saying the Heat are going to win this game if they can keep Jamal Murray quiet, because to me, he is the X factor in this series for Denver, because Nikola Jokic is going to do, you know, what he does every single game, put up a bajillion points, get a million rebounds, and have, you know, on the side of that, just a bajillion other assists. He's just going to do everything. He's going to make everybody around him better. To me, that's a lot harder to take away and eliminate than eliminating the scoring of Jamal Murray. And the Heat were able to do that very effectively throughout the game. And you could see once Jamal started to hit those big shots, the crowd really started to get into it. He started to feel it a little bit. So I really think that if Denver is going to win this series, it's not necessarily going to be because Nikola Jokic gave superhuman performances, because I think we can come to expect that now. It's going to be because Jamal Murray plays really, really well and is that 1B to Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Jokic is going to give you 30-plus every single night, and if he's not, the amount of points and assists that he's given is going to be racking up near 50, right? Each and every night. It's what Murray is able to give you, and really what maybe even Jokic is able to create for Murray and vice versa, because their two-man game is only able to work as well as both players are playing. If one is faltering, then the Miami Heat can send four bodies at Jokic without the worry of Murray killing them in that way. And that's really, I think, the story of that game, because there's times where it seemed like all five Miami players had a hand on Jokic when he was in the paint and able to at least make him work a little bit harder without them necessarily getting burned because Murray's quieter night. But like you said, he did still had a lot of production in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I mean, Jokic, I mean, you said near 50, he had 41 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 assists. They were able to cut down on his assists a little bit. And again, assists and rebounds, I feel like, you know, with points, you can do things as a team defensively to effectively eliminate a guy from having a huge night. You can take away a guy completely if you wanted to. The problem with that is you leave yourself open for, you know, vulnerable to other guys to score. The thing with Jokic and like assists and rebounds, because he does both of those things very well. Sometimes the ball just bounces to you, and you know, it's just one of those things where it comes right to you. And because he's so freaking tall, there are a lot of times where that's going to happen. Yes, you can gang rebound, but he is a freaking unit, and he's hard to move. And yes, Bam's a big guy, but he's not as big as Jokic. And Jokic is a pretty ferocious rebounder. So that can be hard to do sometimes. And the assists can, they can go either way too. There are a lot of factors to it, because one, Jokic isn't going to get an assist if the guys don't make the shots, obviously. But two, you hear it all the time in football, and it was something that, you know, even as a point guard, you know, I heard quite a bit, but especially playing quarterback, you can throw guys open, right? And Jokic does that very well, from the standpoint of there could be somebody who looks like he is covered, but Jokic can put it in a position that only they can catch it in, and he effectively throws them open into a shot or into, you know, whatever offense they're trying to run. So that can be hard to eliminate sometimes as well, because sometimes Jokic, like I said, can just make somebody open. The points, on the other hand, again, that can be a little bit easier to eliminate. And if you're going to be taking away, you know, if you have the choice between Jokic or Murray, I do think that the easier person to take care of in that situation is definitely Murray, because he doesn't provide as much of a matchup problem as Jokic does. And if the Heat can limit Murray to like under 20 points a game in this series, I think they've got a really, really good shot at winning this, because I don't think you can count on Aaron Gordon giving you 15, 20 a game each time. KCP has been hit or miss. It's really got to be the third scorer for this team really has to be Michael Porter Jr. Like if Jamal Murray's not going to score, then Porter Jr.'s got to step up. And if he can't, then, I mean, he got a chance. They really do.
Yeah, and Porter's really struggled with his shot early in this series. Really struggled last game. I think you're getting pretty much dunks and layups from Gordon when they put so much attention on Jokic. He's able to kick it to Gordon in that dunker spot, and he's able to just get that one dribble or just two steps, and then it goes up. And that's really where his production lies. So getting more from maybe those two guys will alleviate that, just the need that they have to have, the reliance they have to have on Murray just doing magic from the perimeter. That's really what was the separator in that Lakers series. And it might be the differentiating thing in this series, but what can Denver do, and what can they change on the offensive side? Because it seems like they're able to create easy looks at will. But what's the difference between game one and game two and how their offense was running? Was it a little more stagnant because Jokic had the ball a little bit more and it stuck with him a little bit more because he was in attack mode? What do you think?
Well, I don't think it certainly wasn't the fact that Denver wasn't hitting their shots. They shot 52% from the field and they shot about almost 40% from the 3-point line. So it wasn't like they weren't hitting their shots. Now, a big portion of that does come from the fact that Jokic took quite a bit of shots. But again, I think it goes back to the assist factor, I think, for Jokic. He only had 4 assists, and collectively as a team, Denver only had 23. So I think part of why Miami was able to kind of stifle Denver's offense is because they were able to play from in front, which they weren't able to do in the first game. Because the first game, I mean, if we go back to that, they were pretty much down and out almost the entire game. They made a couple runs, but they never really got close enough to make Denver really sweat. They just weren't hitting their shots. And because they were able to go on a run, because they were able to get out in front, they were able to really sit back in their zone, which is something they weren't able to do a ton in game one. But they really, really relied on it, especially in the fourth quarter. And for whatever reason, it seemed like that zone really gave Denver fits, which I was actually really surprised about. Because when you run a 2-3 like that, you can put a big guy right in the middle. And if you have a big guy like Jokic who can dictate the offense in a way that he can, like a point guard, it feels like that would be the perfect zone breaker. But for whatever reason, I mean, I couldn't quite put a finger on it necessarily. They just weren't able to break it. Jokic did fine, but it felt like every time he kicked out, it almost felt like Miami's zone was allowing Jokic to go, okay, you know what, here, you can catch it in the middle. We're going to give you your lane, but you're not going to be able to pass out of this effectively. You're not going to be able to pass somebody open in our zone. We're going to stretch it out a little bit, not condense it on you, and then we're going to eliminate that pass out. That was the only thing really that I could kind of see, because like I said, if you put somebody in the middle of the zone, you can break it down fairly quickly. But I guess if you're going to give up the middle slightly, then yes, you can cover the perimeter a little bit more effectively. And I think that was really the only thing that I noticed right out of the gate, at least towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter, when they really started to heavily rely on that zone. So I think if you're watching this series and Miami goes ahead in a game, you know, at least on the scoreboard, pay attention to when they drop into that zone, because they really, really like stuck to it once they got ahead.
I think that's the perfect jumping off point to talk about Miami and what they did well in this game. And we talked about the shot making, the high percentage. I think the biggest thing for me was Jimmy Butler's aggressiveness, especially late in game. Still feels like he doesn't have either the energy tank or isn't getting the looks that he's looking for to really take over like he did in the first two series of the playoffs. And that's really what I'm kind of waiting for I think would take this series and flip it on its head if Jimmy Butler starts putting up 35, 40 points.
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult for him, because the two guys who he's facing defensively are Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr., and both of those guys are monsters. Like, they're huge. Aaron Gordon specifically is just gigantic, and Michael Porter's not small either. And let me look up how big Bruce Brown is. So he's 6'4", but he's got a 6'9 wingspan. I mean, Denver's size is very noticeable, at least when you compare them to a team like the Warriors. So I think Butler's going to have a tough time maybe cracking that 30-point barrier if he keeps having guys on him that just dwarf him. You know, he was able to put up 21 points, but he was also able to be effective elsewhere on the offense. He had 9 assists, which really helped the Heat. They had 28 assists throughout the course of the game. I agree with you. If Jimmy Butler can get his offense going, then it really would flip this series, although it's not like it's been uneven because it's 1-1. But that would be one of those things where, you'd look at a game where, Jimmy's scoring 30, 35. You'd think that that'd be a game where the Heat could win. And it's one of those things where I think that the difference between Miami and Denver so far in this series is the fact that Miami proved that they can win without Jimmy Butler having an A-plus game. And the Nuggets had a tough time, obviously, winning because they didn't in Game 2, without their guy, Jamal Murray, producing a high number of points on the offensive end. Like, obviously, Jokic is going to be that X factor for them, at least in terms of points. But Murray wasn't able to give them what they needed, and neither was Jimmy, but the team as a whole around Jimmy was able to help that, unlike the team around Murray and Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, Miami's supporting cast is outstanding.
Yeah, Strus had a resurgence game, but he had an awful game one, comes back, makes three threes in the first quarter. Gabe Vincent was on fire throughout the game.
Yeah, he had 23.
Duncan Robinson had that spurt in the third quarter that got them the lead. That's just really what they were looking for. I think that was the biggest storyline coming out of game one, was that supporting cast couldn't make a shot. And then in this game, they were making them.
Yeah, and, for Miami, they're expecting Tyler Hero back, probably game three. And I don't think that Tyler Hero is going to be inserted into the starting lineup. And I think Eric Spoelstra is a good enough coach to realize that that's probably not the best idea.
Are you backing up back there?
No, but there is a van outside of this Airbnb that we're in right now. And the window that I'm sitting next to, or I'm not even sitting next to, it's across the room. Bree opened earlier in the day. She didn't know how to close it, and I tried to close it, and by golly, I don't know how to close it either. Truthfully, I don't know how she got it open, but I tried messing with the knob. I tried pushing everything. Like, it wouldn't close. So, yeah, we got that going on right now. Anyway, I totally lost my train of thought. Yes. So Tyler Hero, I think if you're Eric Spoelstra, is going to be the perfect guy to have come off your bench, because what you need right now is to not disrupt your team's chemistry because you are flowing so well. Now, and this was a point that was made on the broadcast the other night, is that the team that Tyler Hero is coming back to is not the team that he left when he got injured. And obviously I can't attest to that because I'm a Kings fan. I'm not a Heat fan. I haven't watched them this whole year. But there is something to be said about the fact that the Heat are really in a good flow right now. Kyle Lowry has sort of taken that role as the leader of the bench unit. If you could have Kyle Lowry, Caleb Martin, who got put on the bench, Spoelstra inserted Kevin Love, which actually was worked out really well for them. He had 6 points, 1 assist, and 10 rebounds, sort of to help offset the whole Aaron Gordon factor. Kyle Lowry, Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, and Tyler Hero coming off your bench. Even if Hero only gives you 15 to 20 minutes and he gives you, I don't know, anywhere from 8 to 15 points, that's huge for them. I mean, imagine if Tyler Hero played in this game and he gave them 10 points. Or you just have somebody else coming off the bench who can spread out the floor for somebody like Jimmy Butler, or hell, even Bam, who has definitely benefited from going up against Jokic as opposed to the physical defense of Boston, because there were a couple games when they were playing against Boston where he was like a no-show, and so far he's played really, really well this series. So having Tyler Hero back out there for them is going to be massive for them, if only to provide another threat to spread out the floor.
Yeah, but how effective is he going to be? Like, what is the expectation of him?
I don't know.
Coming back with coming back from a broken shooting hand, hasn't played. Can you just get back up to speed that quickly?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it's a huge benefit for him that he's coming back when they're back in Miami. Because I think coming back and having your first game be in Denver with the altitude would be tough. Because not only are you fighting the fact that you're out of condition shape, but now you're fighting the fact that you're out of condition shape and you're a mile up. You're way up in Denver. So I think he's actually going to benefit from the fact that they're in Miami. They're going to be at home, somewhere he's comfortable. And I think, honestly, if you're a Heat fan or you're, Eric Spoelstra, I think the most reasonable expectation for Tyler Herro is probably, anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes, maybe 25 if he catches fire. And then, 5 to 15 points, 8 to 15 points, somewhere in there. You got to make sure that he's contributing on the defensive end because he's not a great defender. Now, neither is Duncan Robinson, so that'll be interesting if they have both of them out there at the same time because they're both probably going to be coming off the bench. I don't know. I don't think if you're a Heat fan, you're going to be expecting Tyler Herro to necessarily – I don't know if it's fair to say that he's going to be the difference maker in the series. He definitely could be. But I don't think it's fair to expect him to be that.
Mm-hmm. I think a couple of things. I think Gabe Vincent's kind of taken his role as Herro has gone on. So Lowry's interesting, right? Does he give you more with the leadership, running, being able to manage the pace of the game while he's in? Does he give you that? And is that enough to make up for his lack of production that you would think Herro would make up for? I think Herro could give you 10 points for sure, but it's going to be potentially less efficient. And on the defensive end, he's more of a liability than Lowry. So where does – it's interesting where he would fit. Does he just take out the Duncan Robinson role when – really, Robinson has played well throughout these playoffs when he's gotten that extended role and that run.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, because Spoelstra played Cody Zeller and he played Hayward Highsmith, but they both are bigs. And, Tyler Herro is not. So I'm not sure. Spoelstra's going to have – that's a tough decision because Lowry's been relatively effective for the most part. And there is something to be said about having, like you said, that leader off the bench to control the offense and control the pace of the game. You definitely need somebody like that out there pretty much at all times. And he can do that very, very well. I don't know. I'm glad I'm not the coach because that's a tough decision to make because, you're right. Duncan Robinson has been really effective so far, and you don't want to throw him off because he's been – for somebody who's been labeled as just a shooter, the amount of drives he's had this postseason has been really, really just, eye-opening. I feel like I'd see him driving the hoop more often than I see him taking threes now. He's freaking turned into a bulldozer, it seems like, which has been really impressive. I don't know. I really don't know because Caleb Martin's been playing really well. I don't know if you can take him completely out of the not completely out of the rotation, but diminish him. It's very, very tough because everybody on the Heat this postseason has had a game, it seems like, where they were either the main factor or a huge factor as to why the Heat won. So everybody's in a fairly good rhythm. I don't know. I really don't know.
So I'm looking at some of the game two statistics and does Herro help? The big thing about Denver, right, that teams have exploited at least this year. And I think purely speaking of when we saw Denver in Sacramento earlier this year, that Sacramento was able to get so much in the paint because they do not have a rim protector. Because Jokic it's his worst quality, right, on the defensive side. It's just not what he is. But Miami only getting 34 in the paint compared to Denver's 50. I think that that'd be an area that they would almost want to even out, especially when you think of what Jimmy Butler can do in producing in the paint.
I don't know.
Like, how does he get there? Is it just breaking down that first defender? Is that the struggle that there is?
For Butler getting to the paint?
Yeah.
Again, I think it comes back to size. I mean, it's one thing. I mean, you go up against a bigger defender, not only – and this is my whole life because I was always pretty much the shortest player on any given team that I played against. You go up against a taller defender, not only do they have the ability to just cover more ground than you, but let's say even that you get by them. Well, now, even if you are a step ahead of them, it may not necessarily feel – like you're a step ahead of them. Because if you go up for a shot, because they're bigger than you, because they're longer than you, they might still be able to reach and impact your shot. That's why one of the reasons why nobody on the show – well, that's not necessarily true. There's some people on the show might not know, but we had a guy on our varsity team at Roseville, Sam, you know, Zach Mancha, who was a great defender. And part of the reason why he was a great defender is because he was so long. So even though you got by him sometimes, he was still able to recover really well just because of his length. And I think when you're dealing with somebody who's not only outweighs you, like Aaron Gordon, but is also very long, it makes it really, really tough. Even if you're a good offensive player who's got a lot of good moves and who's got a quick first step, it can be really difficult to get by bigger defenders because it's just not as simple as going up against somebody who is your size. And not to mention that everybody else on the Nuggets is relatively big. So let's say you do get by Aaron Gordon or Michael Porter Jr. Well, then you get to the middle and you have Jokic standing there waiting for you, or you have Aaron Gordon or Michael Porter Jr., depending on who is your main defender, also waiting on you in the paint for a help rotation. So I don't know. It's and the pull-up jumpers are one of those things where that's difficult too, because now you got to shoot over a really tall guy. So I don't know. Jimmy Butler's a good enough player. He's an amazing player. Well, I have confidence that he'll figure it out. But what he has to do against the Nuggets' length in this series is it's a tough ask.
Mm-hmm. But it's if they're going to win the championship, I think it needs to be done.
I you're right. I think he has to be the main power source for the Heat.
Going into Game 3, who you got?
I think the series leaves Miami 2-2. Okay. I think the Heat I think the Heat probably take Game 3 and then Denver rebounds Game 4 and then heads back home with some momentum. And then probably takes Game 5. That's kind of how I feel it going. But I don't know. Again, for the Heat, you're right. Like we said at the very beginning, it sounds so dumb and so simple because it could apply to any team on any given game. But we saw the difference between the Heat hitting their open shots and just hitting their shots in general in Game 2 versus Game 1. You know, they hit a couple of those open shots in Game 1. We might be talking about a totally different series at this point. They only lost by 11, and they shot horribly in Game 1. And they shot really well in Game 2, and look what ended up happening. So, like I said, it sounds so dumb. But I think what you got from the Heat were in extreme on both ends. You got an extremely bad performance, at least from, you know, shooting wise. And then in Game 2, you have them shooting damn near 50% from the 3-point line. So it's probably going to even out somewhere in the middle. And if that happens, then you're right. I think the thing that they're going to have to ask of Jimmy Butler is to get them those extra few points.
Yeah, he has to. I think it's pretty simple. I think Jimmy Butler has to outscore Jamal Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't have, because Jokic is going to be the leading scorer on the court. He's going to be the best player on the court, but you cannot have both Denver stars outplaying everyone on the Heat. You just can't let that happen. I don't know what the formula is to ensure that Jamal Murray stays quiet, because I think he's going to go for a big game. He's just been doing it so often in this postseason. That's why I see Denver winning game three. And I think they have all the control in this series. It's really going to come down to if Denver plays well or if Denver doesn't play well. And it sounds silly. I think it's if Miami plays as well as possible, like in this game, Miami did play phenomenal, but it really comes down to Denver's lack of production really was the difference in that game. So this series is really up for Denver to take.
So you're thinking it's much more of like, it's either going to be Denver's going to win this series or Denver's going to lose it. It's not going to be the Heat are going to take it from them. It's going to be, no, Denver just kind of gave it to them.
Yeah, and it can't really be that black and white, obviously, because I think that discredits Miami. And their defense, I think, is the better. They have a better defense than Denver. But I think Denver's offense this postseason has been at such a level, it's going to carry this team to do great things, to potentially win a championship. And if it doesn't happen for them, I don't think it's a shame or it's like a failure type of thing. I don't want that to be the sort of stigma that's being thrown out. But I think this is a great opportunity for Denver to do something that they've never experienced.
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the stats of game two, and you had said that Jimmy Butler has to outscore Jamal Murray. And I was like, okay, so if we're going to ask Jimmy Butler to keep pace with Jamal Murray, who's going to keep pace with Jokic? So I'm looking at right. So here's the thing. I think, that's my point. I think from the Heat standpoint, because they have such good depth in their rotation, I think what's going to end up happening is you got to ask Jimmy Butler. Okay, hey, you have to outplay Murray. If he scores 20, you got to score 22. If he scores 30, you got to give us 31.
Yeah.
For Jokic, right now, I'm looking at his stats, right? So he had 41 points, 4 assists, and 11 rebounds. So I'm looking at two of the Heat starters. I'm looking squarely at Bam and Gabe Vincent, right?
Yeah.
So between the two of them, they had 44 points, 7 assists, and 9 rebounds. So they had more points, more assists, and 2 less rebounds. So those two combined outplayed Jokic. And then at that point, you have to ask everybody else, Kevin Love, Max Strus, Kyle Lowry, Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, and Tyler Hero, you five have to outplay the other members of Denver. And maybe if Max Strus is somebody who you sort of lump in with Gabe Vincent, you say from your starters, Bam, Gabe, and Max, between you three, two of you combined have to outscore Jokic. And then the other one, you just ask for, hey, we need you to worry about everybody else. But like for simplicity, we'll say Jimmy Butler has to outscore Jamal Murray and Bam and Gabe Vincent together have to outpace Jokic. And if they do that, then I think from a Heat standpoint, you feel relatively good about Kevin Love, Max Strus, Kyle Lowry, Caleb Martin, and Duncan Robinson beating the other five guys on Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. With how Denver's offense is, it's all – the ball is either in Murray or Jokic's hands.
Yeah.
For large amounts of time, and then the others just aren't able to produce. I mean, if Michael Porter Jr., we've seen it in Sacramento. He looked like a Hall of Famer, where everything he put up was money, and it looked like it was going in. If he has one of those games, then Miami, you can just sit there and like, oh, well, we can't really account for that. So you just got to move on type of thing and continue to play this game plan. But I think when you lay it out like that, right, you're saying a good three or four players have to account for the production of two. I think that just automatically puts the ball in Denver's court. They are controlling the pace of the game they're controlling the pace of this series.
Yes, but on the contrary to that, if everybody else, the two stars of Denver are powerhouses, but everybody else around them is not as strong as everybody else around Jimmy Butler on the Heat. So I think that's where it kind of evens out. Like, we go back to game one, Jimmy Butler has 13 points and Jamal Murray goes for 26. So he doubled Jimmy Butler. Well, the Heat lost by 11. Bam Adebayo and Gabe Vincent together scored 45 points and Jokic had 27. So they outpaced Jokic. But Jimmy Butler did not outpace Jamal Murray. Now, Bam and Gabe combined had 10 rebounds. Jokic had, 10 assists. Jokic had 14. And then Bam and Gabe together had 15 rebounds. So they outscored and they out-rebounded Jokic. But Jokic had way more assists. And Jamal Murray had way more points than Jimmy Butler. So at least in the little formula that we're kind of throwing together right there, it worked in game one very well, and it obviously didn't work in game two, because Jimmy Butler didn't outscore Jamal Murray. And I mean, it's one of the things you can't necessarily count for in game one, like Hayward Highsmith came in and gave them 18 points, which I don't know if you can consistently expect that.
No.
But and see, that's what you would hope. Oh, maybe he's going to give us 5. Hey, Hero, maybe you can give us, 8.
You're just adding Tyler Hero to that mix of, well, he can actually be the third leading scorer in Miami. Like, you're potentially putting in a guy that can go toe-to-toe with Michael Porter Jr. in that case. Like, you can just start putting these layers of these teams and what responsibilities they have together. And it's just, well, we got to win the different matchups. We just have to be able to win this series. We have Miami winning game 3. I have Denver winning game 3. And then we'll see about later this series. Game 3 is on Wednesday. I think transitioning now, because we're talking about individual players a little bit more in different matchups. The idea of Jamal Murray, what do you classify him as after this postseason and his, his second breakout performance, I guess, of the postseason?
Top 15, 20 player, right? Does that feel like a stretch? I don't think so.
Yeah. What kind of players are in that range? Like, I think a good one that first comes to mind is like a Donovan Mitchell type, but he's better than Donovan Mitchell.
Is he? Mitchell got some MVP votes this year.
He had a great year. He had a great regular season, right? But Jamal Murray in the postseason has outplayed him.
Right. Okay. So we're taking into who would you rather? Would you rather have Jaylen Brown or Jamal Murray?
Ooh.
Because Jaylen Brown was an All NBA player this year.
Yeah. Was he a first team or second team?
I think he was second team. I believe he's second team.
Would you say that Jamal Murray is an All NBA player?
Okay, well, so let me hang on. Because now I want to see who the All NBA players. Because this would be a good a good marker for us looking at the All NBA team. So on the first team, you have Giannis, Luka, Joel, Gilgeous Alexander, and Jason Tatum. I don't think you're going to put Jamal Murray over any of those guys.
Shea's tough. I don't think that's really fair to compare the two because they're in different points of their careers. And really, who knows what Shea would look like on a team that's actually – that has things around him. So I think that's kind of tough. But, I think that's safe to say.
Right. Okay, so we move to the second one. We go Jaylen Brown, Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry, Nikola Jokic, and then Donovan Mitchell.
Is he kind of in there?
I feel like he's closer to Donovan Mitchell and Jaylen Brown. So here's the third team. You have De'Aaron, LeBron, Dame, Julius Randle, and Domantas Sabonis.
Well, he's above Sabonis. He's above Randall. Right now, gosh, is he above LeBron James right now? Would you rather have Jamal Murray or LeBron James on your team right now?
I think you'd rather have LeBron at this point. Do you want him more than Fox? And that's so tough for us because we see Fox every night.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a Kings fan, you go, hell no. Because you watch what De'Aaron Fox did for the Kings this year, and you're like, there's no way. Like, I don't want anybody else. Like, I'm perfectly comfortable with having De'Aaron.
In the postseason, too. I mean, exactly. He's a top five player in the postseason and in the first round.
Right, exactly.
So I don't think you can.
I think if this was taken into account postseason, I think De'Aaron probably would have been moved up to the second team.
Well, people were voting him. People thought he got snubbed for being on the third team.
Yeah.
People had him in as a second team player, but I think that just depends. All NBA is just so dependent on how people value the number of games, because I think people were diminishing what Steph did because he missed so many games and different things like that. But if you're just going off of regular season and postseason, he's not better than Steph.
He's easily top 20. Easily. Easily.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got to be.
Easily.
Is there anyone missing from that? Well, KD, Devin Booker.
Right.
Is he better than both of those guys?
No. Probably not. Probably not. So I'm looking at – so CBS has a list right now of the top 50 players in the NBA. So I'm just going to go down the list, and I will stop when I think we reach an appropriate point for Jamal Murray, because they obviously – so, you know, top five. So they have Durant is six, Curry is seven, who's eight? Okay, so Gilgeous Alexander's eight. Dame is nine. Okay, so here's an interesting question. Okay, who'd you rather have? So here's who they have 10. Would you rather have Ja Morant or Jamal Murray?
Just purely based off of basketball.
Yes. Yes.
Man, I think – have we really seen Ja Morant go off in the playoffs?
I'm sure he has.
But, like, consistently? Because I think Ja Morant can carry a team in the regular season better than Jamal Murray would be able to. But if you take them in a seven-game series, I think Jamal Murray is more valuable.
So I'll just give you Jamal Murray on this list. And this list was put out in February, so keep that in mind. They had him at 39. So again, this was in February, so we're not at the postseason yet when this list came out.
Mm-hmm.
But given what we know now, that's so tough. That's so tough. Okay, but see, here's the thing. So if we're talking, they have LeBron at 11, Donovan at 12, Jaylen Brown at 13, Sabonis at 15. Kawhi at 15, they have Halliburton above Fox, which just feels like a slap in the face. Now I have to know. Where is De'Aaron on this list? He's not even in the top 20. Oh, he's just outside the top 25. He's 26. Which is just BS, because that's just not true. So they have Devin Booker at 25, Zion at 24. He's better than Zion, at least right now.
Yep.
I think I would take him over Paul George.
Yeah.
What about Kyrie? Just basketball.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have him over Kyrie. So would you take him over Bam Adebayo?
Yeah.
Okay. So they have James Harden at 20. So I think you'd take him over James.
No doubt.
Then we're getting into the Jimmy Butler, Pascal Siakam, Anthony Davis, Tyrese Halliburton, Kawhi Leonard. Ooh.
Would you take – well, Kawhi was great in the postseason in the two or three games that he played, and then he just vanished. If you're saying, I mean, injuries are a thing. with Kawhi. So
yeah,
and injuries have been a thing with Jamal Murray too the last past couple of years. I think I'd rather have Jamal.
Yeah.
Kawhi. Oh, is that sacrilege?
I don't know.
Is that recent? Is that too much living in the moment of what's maybe happening?
Kawhi at his best is a top five NBA player, but he just hasn't been at his best for so long. And it pains me to say, cause he was my guy forever. But I mean, and that's the thing too. You know, we're talking about when these players are at their absolute peak. And if Kawhi Leonard is going to give you his absolute peak, then there are very, very few players you take over him. Very few.
Yeah, but his peak is just so sporadic nowadays. Like, really, the last time he was consistently a top five NBA player was 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So then, you know, if we're talking about guards, I think the conversation is, you know, who would you take? Would you take Gilgeous Alexander? Would you take Jason Tatum? Would you take Jaylen Brown? And again, I'm encompassing shooting guards as well. Would you take Dame, Ja, Fox? I think you're in that sort of conversation of who you're talking with. And it's very hard. Like, I would not take him over Donovan Mitchell at this point. I don't think so. I think I would take him over Ja. Now, of course, I value defense very, very highly. Like, if you have a guy who's scoring and he's giving you stuff on defense, like, that's absolutely huge for a team. Like, Fox this year, again, he wasn't the greatest defender in the world. But when he wanted to, which was more often than not because Mike Brown was able to sort of get it out of him, he was able to give you some really good defensive effort.
Yeah, it was like timely defensive.
Right, exactly. Like, when we need you, you need to do this. And he does. I can't necessarily speak to everybody else because we don't watch them as religiously. But I think just given the preliminary knowledge right now, just based off stats and, you know, what we've seen and all that other stuff, I think I would – think I would take him over Ja.
Yeah,
that feels hard to roll off the tongue, but at this point, would you take him over Dame?
I think factors of like age and
keep in mind he averaged 31 points this season. No,
Dame played. I think this was the highest level Dame has played, and a shorter sample size. Do the Trailblazers have a better chance of making the playoffs with Jamal Murray next year rather than Damian Lillard? I don't think
no.
Right, so then he can't be a more valuable player than Damian Lillard.
You know what the interesting thing is how much of this, how much of Jamal Murray's standing comes from Giannis? I mean, not Giannis, Jokic. Because Jokic makes everybody around him that much better. So is Jamal Murray great? I mean, he is a great player. How much does Jamal Murray get elevated by Jokic? Which is something that's probably an impossible question to answer. But it is something.
It's significant, right?
Yeah.
It's, of course, significant. And you can also say, well, Jokic is elevated when Jamal Murray is playing.
Absolutely.
At his best. Because that Lakers series. They're a great
two-man game.
Yeah, like that Lakers series, it was impossible to defend both of them when they were on. But then also, each individual player, if you just throw them the ball and tell them, hey, beat your matchup, they were doing it.
Yes.
And that really doesn't – and I mean, there's some, of course – like their help defense can't sag off their defenders. If you're the primary defender on Jamal Murray, you can't help off as much and help on Jokic. Like there's those elements, right? There's those underlying details. But if you were to just say, hey, Jokic versus AD, Jokic was winning that matchup. And the same with Jamal Murray. I mean, he was able to, off the dribble, create his own looks. So I think that sort of gives his stats a lot of credence in this in this run that he's had.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough question.
Yeah, it's very tough. If he's a top 50, has he had a top 15 season? I think you can say yes. When this season is over, regular season and playoffs, he will be a top. He would have had a top 15 season. I think you can say the same thing with Jimmy Butler, who had an all right regular season, but then just turned it on in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, it's tough.
And it honestly means nothing. It's just interesting of yes. where you would kind of put it. And it's really hard to value guys like Kevin Durant, LeBron, Kawhi, Steph Lesser, but guys that are aging who have this legacy, who have been on championship teams, who have been finals MVPs, how do you rate them in their current form, whether it be injuries or disappointing postseasons? Do you still value those more than the experience?
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. I mean, it's meaningless talk. It's just like barbershop talk.
Yes. Very much so. But, I mean, I don't know. that's what makes sports great, right? Like, these conversations are meaningless, but they're fun to have.
yeah.
And that's part of the reason why sports is so great, because, you know, at the end of the day, like, sports really isn't, I will continue to champion the idea that sports is arguably the greatest thing that we have going for us as a society for so many different reasons. But at the end of the day, it's really not as important as in terms of, I guess, like, well, we're not going to get into that, but you know what I mean? So I don't know. Conversation like these are always fun to have. There's never really a right answer to mm-hmm. one of them. I think if you're a Denver fan, you'd say Jamal Murray is a top 15 player in the league, and you wouldn't even think about it. But of course, we say that for Fox as well. And it wouldn't even be, we wouldn't even hesitate. So we're coming to the end of the episode. Again, we already talked about Denver. We have different picks for who's going to win this game. So I'll give you this hypothetical question, and I'll give you and then I'll answer the same one. Denver wins. Well, it's actually not even a question, actually. I totally framed that wrong. But Denver wins game three because why? Headlines Thursday morning. Denver won game three because why?
Murray looks magnificent. Nuggets star drops 40 in winning effort.
Okay, so the Denver's hopes on winning are more resting with Murray, you're saying. And I agree with you, I think.
I just think he's going to have a bounce back game. I don't think you have to qualify it with anything like, oh, he's more important than Jokic. I mean, Jokic is... Whoa!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know you disagreed that much.
Yeah, meta
depth.
Yeah, that one. Pardon me. I tried to suppress it with my microphone, with putting my hand around my mic, but it didn't obviously work.
that was a lesser than what it actually was.
Well, the problem is that there's no freaking mute button on this app. So anytime I sneeze or have to cough or anything like that, I got to quickly put my hand over the mic, and sometimes it just doesn't cover. That's the problem with recording with on this app. There's no mute button.
Well, we don't want it. I want everything.
That's true.
You
it is
in your
this
entirety.
That is the beauty of the podcast, is that it usually is very raw.
Yeah.
So
I don't even know what I was talking about. Oh,
you were talking about Jamal Murray dropping 40. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
What you got?
Heat win game three because Well, just exactly like we said, they continue their hot shooting, and they limit Jamal Murray to under 20 points. I really think that that's going to be the marker for them. I don't think Jimmy Butler absolutely has to score 30 points as long as the Heat continue their hot shooting. So I think if we're sitting here Thursday morning and we're reading the headlines, Heat will have won game three because Jamal Murray went under 20 points, and the Heat were hitting their shots. I think those are the two biggest things. And if the Heat don't hit their shots and they have to rely on Jimmy Butler, not that he can't do it, but it's a big ask against a very tall and very long Denver team. So I think their recipe for success is going to be spreading the ball around, getting everybody involved, and then just playing nails on defense against Murray, because Jokic is going to get his pretty much any day of the week. So
he's probably doing it today. Right now, he's just lining him up in the scrimmage.
Absolutely. He probably goes okay and just like he doesn't even have to try to win.
Well, yeah, he's just got to play as the Nuggets and throw it down to himself.
I haven't played 2K in so long.
Yeah, I haven't. It's just the same. It's the same game.
You're a FIFA guy, so.
I haven't played FIFA in a couple years either. I haven't gotten the last three.
Sports games have really fallen off. I mean, they don't. There's no real anticipation, I don't think, for them, because they're pretty much the same thing every year.
Yeah, for me, they just take so much time. Either you got to spend a lot of money to get all the packs, or you got to spend a lot of time to build up to for a team that's kind of competitive.
Yeah.
And that's just not something I'm really prioritizing anymore.
No. All righty, well, thank you all so much for sticking with us to the end of the video. We're not recording anymore. Podcast. We're not on screen anymore.
We're not on screen.
And, we will see you all probably
doing this, at least to space out the podcast
and to space out the time between each game is probably go like every two games or so. So we have this episode after game two. We'll probably see you all after game four. So until then, enjoy the series. Enjoy your week, and we'll see you all very soon.
See ya.